This episode of the Free Lunch Podcast is brought to you by the Selma Project, an initiative created to infuse hope and inspiration into the youth of Selma, Alabama through culture, art, and entertainment. It is a call on natives and friends of the Selma movement to use their gifts, talents, and resources to pave a road of success for future generations. And brought to you by faithful listeners everywhere. And now to the show. Blah!
One time. Two time. Three. See me shine. Put some light on their mind. Illuminate the dark. Give them sight if they blind. And see me shine. For the ones that they said will never make it.
Welcome to the Free Lunch Podcast. Home of the New South Movement. This is your boy Tight, and I got B-Jeezy with me. B-Jeezy, what's happening?
Man, y'all stressing me out, man. What's happening? Free Lunch Podcast. This is your boy BG, the 2-7 kid. Let's do this thing.
Man, I'm going to bring C. Frank Campbell in, the third leg of the Free Lunch Podcast crew. C. Campbell, what's happening?
What's going on, people? What's happening, world? What's going on, fam?
Man, why y'all can't communicate?
Man. You don't give up. You don't be prompting us, man. You just set the time that we just have to comply.
No. Okay, man, if the listeners knew what we have to go through, what I have to go through to deal with this stuff, man, y'all would really be I ain't even got the word right now. I'm gonna take a step back and let y'all talk. Y'all talk for a minute. Let me take a step back to get myself under control.
Irridiculous, man. It's ridiculous. We don't even have an opportunity to prep, man. Ty just set the time. We just have to show up and perform without any warm up. Who you know can perform without warm up?
Man, we just have to be there. We just got to communicate. Bro.
We warmed up already. That I see why Eddie Kane left the group. I see why Eddie Kane left the group.
Oh, Lord. Here we go.
I see why Bobby Brown went solo.
No INT.
Huh?
Ain't no INT.
Yeah, you can spell me and team.
Hey, go. So it's that David Reverend with the Temptations.
I see why Bobby Brown left New Edition.
Hey. No, he KC. I'm KC. And this
is it. People only knew what I had to deal with. We've been trying to get this thing underway for an hour. And now we finally able to start recording, and we prepped yesterday. So I don't understand.
What is the
man? We just had a conversation yesterday.
Well, we ain't finna do nothing. Bring it to the people. That's what we about to do.
Let's do it.
Yeah, I just had to get myself under control. I need to vent for a minute. I love the Free Lunch Podcast listener because maybe they understand me. But if they only knew what we had to deal with. But I got a question. So I've been on my Instagram game today.
You been lurking?
I've been lurking. Question. What is a self-proclaimed Instagram model?
It's a model that then built her basis just off of Instagram pictures and posts and stuff.
Is that a talent?
I mean,
it's a new avenue.
That's subjective, but some of them do got talent.
Would you date the Instagram model?
Hold on now. It's a difference between calling talent and what I date. Now.
Well, that was the second question. That's a follow-up to the first
one. I got to know their personality before I can proclaim the date. But I look at them.
See Frank Campbell.
I'll drop a DM.
Huh?
What's up with you?
I'll drop him a DM.
Would I date the Instagram model?
Yeah. What is that, a self-proclaimed? How do you become, is that self-proclaimed or do somebody, are you anointed by the Instagram people that you a model?
I don't know, man. Just the ones I've seen, it seems as though they own calling, man. You know, but for a dating Instagram model, I don't know about that, man. You got just like anybody else, you got to get known, man.
It's probably based off a number of followers you got.
So is that equivalent to walking on the catwalk to be an Instagram model?
I don't think it's
is that the new catwalk?
No, I don't think it's that. I think it's the new jet.
On that, the new pay 42, 43?
That's the beauty of the week now.
And then if you got so many thousands of followers, then you qualify for, you know, walkthroughs at clubs and people to call you in for a special appearance or something. You become a celebrity.
Really? Are they really bringing these girls out to clubs and having meet and greets and all that?
Yeah, man. They celebrities.
That's what they do now.
Really?
Mm-hmm. So we behind the curve. We need to come up with a gimmick. So one of y'all need to get y'all stuff together.
I think we got a celebrity on the podcast right now.
Who is that?
I think we got one now. That's what we're going to talk about. That's what we're going to talk about today.
Please so too. I went to that YouTube, boy. I was shocked.
Yeah, we got a celebrity on the podcast now. I mean, for those that don't know, C. Frank Campbell, one of our extensions of the Free Lunch Podcast, did some great journalism this past week that we want to talk about today for the people. But before we even get to that topic, I think it's that time.
Yeah, Tom.
Well, we got a sponsor, so I got to take a moment here to first acknowledge our sponsor, a faithful listener. And as we continue to have sponsorship, we will continue to bring you various forms of this podcast and various segments of this podcast. For those of you that continue to listen that would like to donate, support Free Lunch Podcast, you can always hit us up on the freelunchpodcast@gmail.com, or you can hit us up through our blog or Instagram and all that good stuff that BG will be providing at the end of the show. But for today, as part of my legal duty, since we do have a sponsor, I do have a song and a topic that I would like to share with the people today.
And a good one?
Well, I mean, I'm a sing, because I haven't sung in a minute, but I want to dedicate this to Black America, because I think today we're going to have a hodgepodge of topics, and we're really going to bring the people into a conversation that we shared yesterday, but really a conversation that we share on a normal and regular basis, whether it be on the phone or via email or text message.
That sounds good to me.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to dedicate this one to Black America. We need some real good loving, 'cause I'm troubled by the things that I see. We need some real good loving. Ain't nobody been around here loving on we. It's better to love than to lose, than to. Man, what you think? That was okay? That was a good one?
That my song, though, but no.
Damn, you hear that boy take that breath before he starts?
I heard it go.
He went in.
What I did?
Hey, he felt that one, though. He felt it.
You took that breath to get yourself together before you started out.
I had to, man.
I had to.
Y'all boys, man. But I mean, let's get back to the topic at hand. And essentially what we want to do, we bring C. Frank Campbell. He can actually give us some insight into one of the three topics that we kind of want to touch on. But today we're going to have a hodgepodge of topics where we kind of cover three conversations that we've had at random times within our own in internal circle. And I'm really interested in all three of them, but for the most reason, because I really want to hear you guys' perspective and hear your theories. BG, you kind of on the opposite end of the spectrum on a few of these, actually. And so I'm interested to hear your perspective and hear why you the angry man for the day.
We didn't already talked about that. Why I got to be angry.
So which one y'all want to start with, man? We got three topics. I want us to cover Miss Jordan, Miss Winfrey, and Mr. Daniels for today. we can start in any particular order, but I would like to cover those three topics in the next 40 minutes. So, C. Frank Campbell.
What's that?
Since you are the celebrity of the show, and you can kind of explain why, and you don't have to go into the whole background on last week's episode, we kind of talked about, we gave the background to this particular story. But yesterday we all tagged up and we started talking about, actually BG, yesterday we kind of tagged up and you told us that, you had been watching the news and you had saw a few things which kind of triggered both C. Campbell and I to kind of respond and go into, a very passionate conversation with you. So before we even go to C. Campbell, can you kind of give the people exactly what you saw yesterday that kind of triggered the conversation between the three of us?
Oh yeah, really, it was just a follow-up on the Claudia Jordan incident in Auburn, Alabama, at the Auburn Mall, where, you know, she reported that she had been escorted out of the mall by the mall security because she was wearing sunglasses and thought that it might have been a gesture of racism and discrimination that led to that. And so that was last week. And so about 2 days ago, it made it to the local news in Montgomery. They were just covering the story and basically reporting the same thing that had already been on Instagram. And so when I saw that on the local news, I just sent a group text to the Free Lunch Podcast members, and just to get some thoughts and a response on how they felt about the continuation of this story, and that's what kicked it off and led to the things that that we talked about on yesterday. And so it really was just a revisiting of the whole Claudia Jordan thing.
So C. Campbell.
Yo.
Okay, I think BG kind of summarized it, but let's just jump into it. What role have you played in the Claudia Jordan incident, and then kind of elaborate on your opinions based off of what BG shared with us yesterday in text, and just your overall opinion on this particular topic?
All right. Well, everybody knows my role was, you know, when we kind of had it, when we notified about it on a Friday, I went out to the mall to actually just, you know, get some firsthand perspective on the situation, talked with a couple of security guards just to see what the situation was. So I covered that for the podcast. We placed it on YouTube. You know, we got some comments and responses, which we'll tackle a little later. But, from my perspective, like I said, you know, I've been here for a while now, and I honestly don't think it was a racist incident. Looking at it now, the policy itself, you know, we can argue all day and debate about whether the policy of not wearing a hoodie or not wearing shades in the mall, which now that's what the security guard said, was that policy is much like similar to when you walk into a bank or if you walk into a government facility where you have to remove a hoodie or shades that will cover your face so that you can easily be identified. Now, whether that's effective for a mall setting, that's up for debate. Whether it's the most efficient policy or not, it's up for scrutiny. But the fact that I feel like somebody tried to go in there, Ms. Jordan or whoever and her team tried to go in there and make it seem as it was a racist incident, was totally out of context. Because if you clearly see it in the video that her bodyguard posted on Facebook or whatever, they did ask a Caucasian female to remove her sunglasses as soon as she walked in. When I went out and talked with the security guards, they said they had actually been enforcing that for several months. I even talked to some students here on campus, black and white, here in the Auburn area, and both said that they had all been asked to remove their sunglasses. So I don't think it was a situation where it was racism. I think it was something where we had people from the outside coming in trying to make a statement, trying to, and like I said, from my own perspective, somebody who had clearly said this is what happens when you come to Alabama, then trying to put a whole context within the whole state, let alone just the region of the state, trying to just basically blast out the South, blast out the state of Alabama, and just being completely racist as a whole. When here you are for here for 2 seconds for an event, and then you leave, and then now you cause all the scrutiny. And I think people only saw one side of the situation. So, like I said, I was very upset because I live in Auburn, have lived here for 14 or so years between school and working. And I still have my own share of incidents, both negative and positive. And, you know, majority positive, but I've had my incidents here, just here and traveling to other places around this country. But so, you know, I have a pretty good take on, I think, when something is racist or not. And in my opinion, that situation was not racist.
So you posted a video for listeners that are interested. Go to Free Lunch Pod C on YouTube. You can also access the video that C. Frank Campbell posted on our blog and Free Lunch Podcast website, freelunchpodcast.blogspot.com, or you can access the blog from freelunchpodcast.com. So since posting that video, something that we learned was you received some comments that were not so tasteful.
Right.
And I think you did a good job of explaining as far as the intent and the purpose for you going down to talk to the security at the Auburn Mall was more or less to get another side, because I truly believe that there's always three sides to any story: his side, her side, and the truth. So in between two perspectives, you probably can find some middle ground. I guess the question that I have for you is, since posting that video and reading some of the comments, how do you feel about the comments and the overall response you've gotten from posting that video?
Right. Like I said, read some of the comments from BG's Facebook page, and they were mostly positive, people saying, you know, that they might not agree with the policy, but from the Facebook page, most listeners said, you know, they might agree with the policy, may be, you know, in their opinion, ignorant or stupid, but they felt that it was not racist, just kind of like myself and you, Tight, and that we all agree on. But there were two comments that were posted on the YouTube page, which we saw this morning, that were very negative. One, I think, who somebody who lives here, you know, basically kind of saying, well, I haven't seen you around, this and that. Now, number two, just because you haven't seen me around, I'm going to live here. All black people don't run around the same circles and hang around the same place. Like I said, I'm not a native here, so you probably wouldn't see me if you don't know me already. And the other comment, which was the one that really, really kind of got to me, and like I said, I don't like to get in the back and forth battles on media and social media and gossip, but had to respond to this one, where it was somebody who presumably that was from up north or northeast or whatever, who used a couple of derogatory terms relating to me, referring to me as a coon, or just some type of ignorant southerner, some other terms that he used. And so my feeling on that is, you know, and that's the exact reason why I was kind of a little upset and kind of heated and bothered by this whole story when it broke, is that you have someone who's not from the state of Alabama, who's not from this area necessarily, or even the South necessarily, comes in, makes an accusation, tries to agitate an issue without getting the full perspective, which is what we were trying to do, is give it a full perspective, not just one side of it, and let the listeners make up their own mind. But you have somebody who has the media attention of a certain population of people, a certain group of people, a certain amount of people, rather, who follows that person. That person has access to cameras and things of that nature. Now they have gone viral to say that this place is racist, this particular incident was racist, this and that. And now you have a bunch of people who don't have the full picture following behind this and believing this issue. And then it's when you have people like that responded to me on the YouTube comments, responding to me without even knowing me or knowing the full story behind it, but just going off the words of this one individual. And that's the main issue, is that we have too many serious and authentic cases of racism, bigotry, inequity in this country, where people are dying, people are hungry, people are can't afford things, people are out of work, things that are real discriminatory. Then we come here with a situation that I say I believe in all my heart was not truly racist at all, taken away from that aspect of it. And then, you know, you got people wanting to make a bigger deal out of what it is, and people giving attention to it. like I said, I don't even really want to have the conversation because I think we're probably giving a little bit too much attention to it myself. But that really got away with me today that somebody would even use the word cooning. So my thing is, if you're trying to advocate for the elimination of hatred, which this person was attempting to do, which we think, how do you eliminate hatred or try to talk against hatred when you're out of the same mouth, you spew hatred and spew terminology like coon, things that were, you know, very derogatory or hurtful to African Americans in this country for years and still are. So my thing was, you know, this person just completely made a moot point of what they were trying to say because they, in the sense of trying to defend something, went ahead and supported that by spewing the same hate out of their own mouth. That's kind of what got away with me today. So that's my take and thoughts on that issue.
And I would agree as far as this is the last time we talking about this particular subject unless we got Ms. Jordan on the podcast.
Right.
Because personally, I'm sick and tired of the story too. And I've shared my views and comments on the topic, so I won't elaborate on it. But I do have a question for BG. And the reason for us even bringing this particular topic up is because, BG, during our conversation yesterday, you made a statement in which you said that this is setting us back 20 years. And I'm interested in you elaborating, if you don't mind, on why you feel like this and the other two topics that we're going to kind of touch on today are kind of setting the culture back versus pushing us forward.
With situations like these, I think it highlights that within the community, we have different groups of people. You've got nationalists, people that are about the community and pushing the community forward, and they live for the people. And then you've got another set of people that are individualist, that take advantage of certain opportunities and certain things that are going on socially to push forward their own brand and their own agenda. We are having a conversation about somebody being asked to leave because of sunglasses. And whether that was just a poor interpretation of the policy that the mall had placed forward, and, you know, she was being harassed for whatever reason. You in a mall, you in somebody's establishment, and if you look a certain kind of way, there's a good chance that somebody might ask you to leave. Okay. Never condoning anybody being harassed or being mistreated or anything like that. But it's sunglasses. And like C. Campbell said, we've got so many issues, real issues that people are dying from, you know, that are embedded, that we know are completely resting in racism and discrimination. And so when you bring this to the masses, you're confusing the picture. You're confusing the picture of sunglasses with schools closing in the hood. You're putting a sunglass case in the same breath with people dying by the gun of policemen because they live in a certain neighborhood or they look a certain kind of way. And so it's like your issue outweighs what's really going on with the people. And then on top of that, it's like, okay, well, you're an activist now. You're an activist because of the mistreatment that you have experienced in Auburn, Alabama. But on a week in and week out basis, you're on a network entity, a television show that highlights a negative aspect of the community, that puts certain interactions between black females in a light that other people can look back and say, like, is that how black people really act? And so it's like, if you're going to be an activist, man, be an activist all the time. If you're going to try to speak to the good of the people, speak to the good of the people all the time and let your works be in line with what you're talking about. But don't just come in. You have a personal incident, which is very subjective as to what really happened. You saying it's racism. The other people could say it's very much enforcing other policy. But then you tell the people it's racism and do all this kind of stuff, and you never go talk to the people that work in that mall. It's black people that work in that mall. It's black people that are consumers that go and shop in that place. Before you go and post a thing like that, take that opportunity to talk to the people and see if that's the climate that everybody experiences. And then after you poll the people, then you can come to the thing and say, I had this experience, and this is what's going on day in and day out. Then you're speaking for the people. But when you just put something and blast it like that with no thought about interacting with the folks, without taking the opportunity to see what's really going on, I think you do a disservice, because now it's like all we do is complain. All we want to do is play the victim role. We're always begging for something to happen when we don't get our way. And so what happens when you do come to a real situation to where you got a real pressing issue and you're trying to voice your concern and be heard, nobody want to hear that, because you done spent 1,000 hours fighting over nonsense, bumping your head into the wall. And so I just feel like this sets a precedent, and we continue to set these precedents to where the attention and the energy gets focused in so many different directions that we never really can come together and put our efforts on things that really matter. And I think that a lot of it is hidden, and people want to be seen, they want the attention, and they want the spotlight. And that's why I feel like it sets us back, because once again, we can't get anything going because we want to be individual.
And really, I don't have much more to add. I think you both verbalized and communicated my sentiments on the topic, and really is the reason why I kind of want to bury it. And the reason I say that is because if you continue to speak on something, it continues to have life, it continues to grow, it continues to gain momentum. And moving forward, unless Ms. Jordan is actually on this particular show, then I'm not interested in talking about it, because my views are essentially what you guys stated. But even to be quite frank and quite blunt, I think it's an opportunity for someone to attempt to stay relevant and stay in the public eye. And because of that, I'm not interested in the conversation anymore. So, but I do want to transition from that topic to one that is really on the other end of the spectrum, but I think is important, and that's with First Lady Michelle Obama speaking at Tuskegee University, which is actually right down the street from Auburn University, where the three of us attended school. And First Lady Michelle Obama, in my opinion, provided a speech, one that's for the ages. It didn't top her Democratic convention nomination speech that she provided a few years ago, but it was a speech that I thought really echoed what we've been preaching on the podcast from the beginning. And that is essentially around our Live Your Truth series, where we talk about and we focus on following your dreams, your passions, and really marrying your passions with your purpose. And in a lot of the speech that she gave, she really encouraged the graduates of Tuskegee class of 2015 to do that. The reason I want to kind of have this conversation, because I'm really interested in BG's comments and his thoughts on the presentation. And a lot of it is around why he's not interested in actually hearing the interview. Charles and I, for the audience, we agree on the message, and he and I think that it was a powerful message, and not even me speaking on Charles' behalf, but Charles, you can give us a minute of your thoughts on the speech before we kind of hear BG's perspective, because I am interested in hearing why he's not interested and hearing that speech and what his issues are with the current administration. CKM, you got a minute?
Yeah. Just my thoughts on it, and I know Ghost has his opinions, and definitely respect those, and to a certain level, I agree with some of it, but I thought that she
don't sat on the fence now. Don't get on here talking about you.
No, I'm not doing it. I'm just, I agree with some of them, but not, you know, not, maybe about 10% of it. But I thought that she gave a message that is very relevant to young people, especially young Black Americans, and any American in general, is because when you look at like the podcast has talked about in you know, in earlier episodes of Living Your Truth, she really talked to the aspect of it is, you know, even though the nation, your parents or your professors may expect you to go on and do certain things, or you may think you want to do certain things, but your real passion, desire, saying, do this, go teach school, go write poetry, go travel around the world. You know, when you truly live an authentic life and do what you are, it's in your heart, you'll be more successful, you'll be happier, and you can be able to affect more change that way. I felt that she gave a message that went to the nation of if people were to listen to it, wasn't just geared towards Blacks, but to Americans as a whole, is that this country is made up of so many different people, so many ethnicities and cultural backgrounds, that, you know, it's time out to stop overlooking those things that make us unique and make us who we are as a nation. It's time to stop overlooking those people and kind of reverting to the simplistic ignorance or stereotypes that have been portrayed, and to move forward and move past it, because if you don't, you're going to exclude yourself from the opportunity of meeting and collaborating and working with people, dynamic people, but you can continue to create a narrative that is going to be discriminatory, a narrative that's going to continue to exclude people. So I think that she really gave a very positive message, not just for, I say, African Americans, but for this nation, is that we got too many people that made too many contributions with nothing. And that these people are still, we're still here, we're striving, we're still strong. And this country is made up of so many ethnicities, other than what the narrative has created, that it's time out. And we really got to start utilizing that and becoming one. And really just, it's time out for just, you know, being discriminatory and being biased for no unapparent reason. And so that's what I took away from the message.
So we finna get BG's, because obviously once you hear BG's thoughts, you'll realize that he and I, and on two different ends of the spectrum. But I would like to add that even though the message, C. Campbell, was for a broader America, it's a message that Black America needs to hear, because mm-hmm. it's not a message that's told within Black America, because in the past, the message was the total opposite, right, to go and get that degree. And it's not out of, it wasn't out of, in my opinion, out of being hateful, or it's not, it's just out of one better for that next generation. Parents want better for their kids, but that may not be what's in that in those kids' heart. But with that being said, I'm interested in BG sharing your thoughts on why you're not interested in even listening to the message, and why you, in our text messages, and maybe I'm overemphasizing or exaggerating your viewpoint, but based off our conversation and text messages and emails, it seems like you're just not even interested in entertaining anything that comes from President Obama or First Lady Michelle Obama.
Well, we already know that they are very inspirational speakers. We know that they can deliver, you know, the words that get people inspired to dream big, to think on a higher plane, and all that type of stuff. And that's fitting for the graduates. And I'm sure that, you know, that was a monumental moment for them to be in that presence and to have her do their graduation address. But personally, in terms of me getting excited about it, I can't, because I know, you know, that's the type of product she's going to deliver, that he, President Obama, would deliver great speeches. But, you know, for me right now, and where I'm, I guess, transitioning to, or whatever it is that I would just like to see people in certain positions put some of those words to action. It's very similar to what you get when you go to church on Sunday. The preacher can give you that word and give you all these kind of things in that pulpit on Sunday morning, but then he can't do anything on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday to really get down and help that community. He ain't on the ground doing those type of things. So I can't really get excited about it until I see some of this stuff show itself in, like, the legislation and the laws and really getting national attention when we're having some of these discrepancies and there are certain deficiencies that are in that said community that these students are coming from. It's good to give them a good speech and send them off. But you're in a position to where you can put that pressure on the entities that are making the role for these kids difficult, where they're pressing to increase the education gap. And if you're not in a said place and you're not, your family don't have a particular type of income, background, things like that, that your education is going to be much poorer than somebody that comes from a more well-off situation. Like, these are things that as a country, but definitely as a community, that need to be looked at. So I can't get excited about a speech where you lifting these kids up and telling them to dream high, but then you're in the position and you're right there on the front end of legislation and you're not taking that same type of fervor to speak to these issues in any other form. Like, there has been nothing on the national platform for those black students exclusively. There's been nothing, but there has been exclusive stuff for immigration, the Hispanic population, the LGBT community. They have had specific agenda items that have had legislation to support them. But what do these kids from the community have? What has changed in the 8 years for them? And so that's why I can't get excited about the speech personally. As a person that has graduated from college, that's out here seeing this thing in real time, I can't get excited about that speech because I know that there is so much more that these kids are going to experience when they get out here in this real world because of the way that the system and because of the way that these laws are being manipulated and changed on a day-to-day basis. So I can't get excited about it.
Well, let me ask you this right here, which was an interesting point in her conversation, in which she spoke, and it actually kind of sparked a light bulb in my own head when she essentially said that she had to figure out how to block out the noise and do things that were authentic to her. So If she's been given the gift of standing in front of people and inspiring them through her words, and maybe one or two kids from that graduating class actually get it and get what she's saying, why isn't that as impactful as your desire to see her, quote unquote, her and her husband, quote unquote, fold up their sleeves and get down and do the grunt work?
You know, I'm not that kid. I'm past that stage. So, yeah, it definitely would be exciting, and it would definitely be a success for that particular individual. But for me, on the outside, looking in and from the I guess, the global perspective and from a long-term perspective, it's like, well, you're in the seat. You're in the presidency of the United States. And in my mind, you have the opportunity to put the issues that face these kids along the way to get to that point. You're in the position to do something about it, to make sure that number grows from maybe two individuals that benefit from it to four, to six, and to see that escalate as time goes by. So I guess it is a success from the short range of having two individuals to be touched by, but like, what can we do in this presidential seat to make sure that we have the same type of successes in a more grand and long-lasting scale?
And I think you devalue, or I think you overlook those achievements that they've done. I think that because you turn a blind eye to a group that you're not interested in, I think that exists. The Let's Move and focusing on obesity. Is that not a huge concern in our community?
That is. But we address obesity and let's move at my facility where I work at. And we still got people that's, look, and then you talk about let's move. Let's move has not even hit the black belt. They ain't doing no let's move in this area where I am now. It has the highest prevalence of obesity, diabetes, hypertension, and heart disease. Ain't no less move going on here. People still fat, out of shape, and dying because of these chronic disease states. So now what?
But whose responsibility is that? Why would you put that on the shoulders of other presidents when they've drawn attention and they've made it a national issue? Same thing with the Brothers Keepers that the president launched, My Brothers Keeper, where essentially what he stated is that moving forward, after post his presidency, that's going to be his mission.
And we keep getting to the program, but once again, it's like you got all these programs entitled, but where are they in effectiveness? You got those programs, but you got these schools that are barely making it because these systems and these governments and all this type of stuff are distributing the money away from the people that need it the most. They're closing the doors on it. They're putting more money into prisons and all that type of stuff than they're putting it into schools. So does that not need to be like on the national agenda to do something to incentivize schools over prisons?
Dosa, I mean, I definitely hear, you know, what you're saying about that aspect of it. But I do think that, like I said, the president and Ms. Obama have made strides. I mean, I said the My Brother's Keeper program, I think that's going to be something that is going to be huge and going to be very effective in the community, and time, man. Everything takes time. And I know sometimes we wanted something to happen right now. What I think the challenge has been, in my opinion, with him and his wife being the two, I guess, at the highest position in the land is that now you got him coming in with the shoulders of everybody on his back, pretty much from one race. And then you come in and it's like you want to make these changes, but then you fight against 400 years of a system that's been created to, in a sense, that hasn't, for the majority of that time, hasn't taken us into consideration. So some of it ain't going to change overnight. I know what you're saying about him taking executive action on immigration and taking some things on with the LGBT community. And those are examples, but it's like people are going to be quicker to support that. So I think he was trying to, you know, go around the issue. Not that I'm skirting around it, but it's like, you know, this is one thing. Black in America is one thing that this country, for the most part, does not really want to deal with. So I think he's done some of the best that he can do. Now, he hasn't done everything that we wanted him to do, but he's done the best that he can do with certain things that he's done. That's just my take on it.
BG, last thought, then we jump to the third topic.
I mean, see, Campbell really just summed up what I'm talking about. So really, your speech is just a whitewashing of what it really is. It's like we got a system, like he said, 400 years plus in place that is designed to keep us oppressed and to keep us from moving forward. So really, at the end of the day, I can't get excited about a speech. All I can do is try to do the work that I can do on the ground to try to, you know, make some of these, make headway and make this current situation as best as I can for the next group. So I can't really get excited about no speech. I just got to focus on, like, the stuff that really matters that's in my face on a day-to-day basis.
So you know, you understand my thoughts. And my thoughts have always been President Obama getting elected has done far greater than anything else he can or can't do, because what it does for the young folks that are coming behind us and coming behind him and us. So I'm less to be critical of him and of his wife for what they've done simply from winning the actual election. But I think it's a topic that's going to generate a lot of conversation between Free Lunch Podcast listeners. But there was a third topic in conversation, and I do want to tie these together at the end of our show, because I think that if we really think about it at a macro level, we'll see how these kind of tie together. And I'll do my best to bring us home. But third topic was essentially around an interview that Lee Daniels did with the Hollywood Reporter, I believe, in which he basically stated something along the lines of him hiring all black people to kind of be the writers of his show Empire, one of the shows he co-founded, and how he looks to empower black writers when as part of his writing and all of that. And I sent that article to you, BG, and Charles, and I was actually kind of surprised again by BG's response, because I know you are an advocate of, and we talked about this on a previous podcast where we talked about how the media today is essentially using people of other backgrounds and other race to tell our story. So essentially what Lee Daniels was stating in his interview was that he was going to do the opposite. He was going to use our people to tell our story. So I sent you guys that article, and it was an interesting read only because the title of that article was very, very attractive and kind of drew you in. But BG, why were you so anti, or why are you anti Lee Daniels, and why were you anti that statement?
Well, you look at what he also said. He said he got a kick out of watching white writers write on, write on, I guess, a black show, and that's what's going on now. So that's the norm. But, you know, based on what he said, is that, you know, in these rooms, the creative rooms, you've got people from the other communities writing about black storylines and black issues. And so therein lies my problem with it. It's just like the products that he has put out at this moment in time has, in my opinion, put black people in a certain light. You know, everything from Precious to what you see with Empire now. It's like that's this whole image of black people that is, I guess, acceptable to American culture and American history as we know it. It fits into the stereotypes and all those type of things. And based off of his statements, a lot of those storylines have had input of other members from different communities. And so I just got a problem. Not until there is some positive storylines, not until there's a more complete representation of the African American experience on TV and on the big screen, I'm gonna forever have problems with anybody putting out a product, because we're getting typecast. They're benefiting off of it, and it's not doing anything to push the way we look at ourselves in a positive direction, and it's allowing other people to look at us as they always have. Is feeding into the propaganda, and is feeding into this whole way that people view us negatively. And so that's what my problem is. And to say that one day you're going to have a team full of black writers, well, when that day gonna come? How long we gotta wait on that? And then, will you even be around long enough for you to even implement that? Because if you start doing too much, they're going to get you out of there. So I can only go off of present and past work. And based off of present and past work, I'm just not a fan.
So just some of the work he's directed are Shadow Boxer, Precious, The Paperboy, The Butler. And he's actually working on this Richard Pryor movie as well. And then television, he's done Empire. C. Campbell, what are do you have any thoughts or comments? Because you didn't really share a lot when we kind of brainstormed. What are your thoughts on Lee Daniels and your viewpoint on his statement and BG's response?
The reason why I didn't respond earlier was because that's when I really had to kind of think about it a little bit. mean, I don't really sit down and watch a whole lot of just, you know, scripted shows to begin with. And then there are some times where, like, when it comes to shows that, you know, I would say, you know, that's popular with African-American crowd, sometimes I just don't, I don't watch all of those. So it's like, it's just because me, man, I just have a certain, you know, things that I watch, certain things that I don't watch. And a lot of time with me working, I don't have a lot of time to watch TV. But I just think sometimes it's like when you look at certain black writers, I understand what Lee Daniels is trying to do in terms of giving more African-Americans opportunity to be writers and create content that's going to highlight our culture. But like you said, you still got to be responsible with that, because sometimes, you know, and, you know, I think somebody else has said, I can't remember what celebrity said. I think maybe it was Don Cheadle. When they talked to him about black in Hollywood, he mentioned, he said, you know, he said, there are things that we put out, but he's like, even everything that we put out as black people ain't always good. And I agree with that statement, because just because it's written by somebody black doesn't mean it's of the best quality all the time. Just like any other shows that have been canceled by Fox or CBS or NBC, every show that somebody comes up with, no matter their celebrity or what content, what ethnicity are, is not always good. It's not always of good television. So you have to be respectful and responsible what you put out. With what BG is saying is, it's like, you know, I think with Empire, it's a successful show. It gets ratings. Like you said, you got to be responsible with, you know, how many different perspectives of African-American lives are being told on that show. I think you got to look at, you know, other shows that have been on, like Blackish or some others. And I think Blackish has had some good content, but you got to look at how far can we really take those shows. I think, you know, even though it's controversial, you know, The Cosby Show is one of the most successful shows that had an African-American cast, because it showed, you know, a stable black family with education, with some other things. It showed another narrative right along the lines with every other show that was on TV. It was very successful for many, many years, but we haven't had seen that form. People have tried to recreate it, but we haven't seen anything as successful as that has been in a long time. There have been African-American leads on a lot of different shows. Like, I've watched The Unit, which was a military-based show, had an African-American lead. He had 24 had the same character playing the president. He had Star Trek Deep Space Nine with Avery Brooks as the lead captain, the first black captain, the only black captain that had a series within the Star Trek franchise, who himself is a professor of African-American culture and plays and history and theater, I think, at Temple or another university up on the Northeast Coast. But even with him, you know, I could definitely tell when there were shows where he was able to take over the script and direct, and shows where he wasn't. I mean, because those are shows that I watch because I like to see black men and black people in leadership roles and things like that. But you have to be very careful of even when you're picking the all-black cast of writers, directors, and things it may be, because you want to be able to show many different perspectives. I think, like we talked about with the first issue we covered, you got shows that highlight only one aspect of our culture. And sadly, because with where I work and the students I work with, black, white, and even international students, sometimes that's the only narrative that they see that's broadcast across the world, is that one picture. And yes, we're writing for it and maybe successful, but we've got to do a much better job, in my opinion, and be responsible, which I think Lee Daniels is attempting to do, and we may see him progress more, but you got to be more responsible with what you put out there. And I think, you know, he's on the cusp of it. Let's just see what he can do with it.
Here's the problem I have with BG's comments. The problem I have with BG's comments is that it comes off to me as though there's a no-win situation. And it's really similar to with First Lady Michelle Obama. It's like you want them to do more, but when they do more, it doesn't satisfy what you've identified as being acceptable. And I think that applies here with Lee Daniels, in that on previous podcasts, you mentioned that you want our story to be told from our perspective. But when we get someone in that position, then they haven't met your expectation, so they're basically buffoonery. And so, that's the reason why I feel like, and when I tease and I say you're the angry guy, or you're just, I don't know if you're playing devil's advocate or what the role, what the personality that you're playing at the time, But I feel like it's a situation that regardless of the approach that they take, it's never going to be good enough for you. And I believe in accountability, but I also believe in realistic goals and understanding the situation and the circumstances. And so I wonder and question whether or not you have realistic expectations.
Well, I mean, it might be radical, but it's definitely not an act. And yeah, I am angry. I'm angry about the fact that a real black man can't get no shine in these public entities, in these mass media forms. Like, you know, we can get a reflection of the very worst depths of the black experience, the poverty, the violence, you know, all of those negative aspects. And then we can see a strong woman and we can see all these type of things, but we don't see a sustained strong black man in anything that's going out to our children, in these movies, on these television shows. And we know that the mass educator of our society now is media, right? So the best way to train up a generation of strong men is to show more strong black men on these television shows, doing the right thing, respecting women, going out, working hard, making a difference in their community. That's how you do that. But for some strange reason, it's mighty hard to get that on a number of shows, on a variety of shows, to show black men doing stuff the right way. Why can't we get that? Why is it that when we do have a black producer or black writers, that they won't take the initiative to make that the main call for what they do? Why is it that we always have to settle for the rap story, the pimp story, the woman that's been mistreated by men, so now she's going to play the game like they play it? Why is it that we've got to be inundated with that type of stuff? I know it's profitable. Right now, our minds are programmed to take interest and to hunger for that type of stuff. But I'm not going to be satisfied until people in that position that reach that platform, use that platform to build our community up. And the only way that you're going to really successfully build this thing is to show black men, young black boys, what it really means to be leaders, what it means to be providers and protectors. And until we get that, I'm going to forever be radical and ain't.
So you make a good point. And I'm not trying to put you on the spot. And we can table this if you're not prepared to answer the question. But it actually brings me back to a question that I was asked today in regards to the Chronicles of a Black Man, where essentially the question was asked to me, what is the solution? And actually my response, if you really want to know the truth, was, you know what, BG, he's been pushing for solutions throughout every show. And you may not have a solution based off of the various topics that we talked about today. And I want to kind of bring all of this together, but what is the solution in this case?
Well, the solution is, of course, with us. With what we do now, you know, having these conversations that are spread amongst our peer group, and then taking every opportunity to make ourselves available to these young kids, you know, whether it be going to the school or being involved in your church group or coaching and things like that, to give them an example. They just need something to follow, man, and especially, you know, young kids that might not have a direct male role model. They just need somebody to look up to, just like we needed somebody to look up to. So in terms of what we can do or what a solution is just for us as men that are out here living in this world, is just to put ourselves in a position of being examples. Give the kids something to aspire to be. And then if every man lives up to that, if every person lives up to that, then when we ascend to having people in these positions to where they have control or a piece of control of the media, then they'll be talking that same type of language. It's got to be a unified approach, and we all have to have value in making that happen. The solution is easy. Kids need examples, and they need something to aspire to be. And so, like I say, individuals can do it, And I think that for me personally, I'm going to do it. I mean, in terms of what I support, I'm only supporting things that are going to edify our young black kings and queens.
See, Cam, what's the solution?
The solution to me is similar. I mean, we've got to be able to, and I think there have been shows. It's just that, like I said, there's two clear shows I mentioned. You know, it wasn't shows that most of Black America took interest in, where you had black men in the lead. The unit, Star Trek Deep Space Nine, had two black men, prominent black men. One was Dennis Haysbert, who was the voice of Allstate, the Allstate guy, was the lead on the unit on CBS for about 3 or 4 seasons. And like I said, you had Avery Brooks, who is an icon, in my opinions, in terms of African-American history and culture and what he's done for African-American heritage and things that most black people don't even take notice of on the larger masses because, like BG said, it's not the traditional rap story, the pimp story. So we've had these shows, we've had these black characters, but we just haven't taken time to take notice of it. And I think that's the issue is that, you know, when we do have a successful show, we do have somebody successful in the league, we got to start paying attention and highlighting those people and not just letting it go because it's quote unquote not the black show, so to speak. So I think you got it, number one. That's one part of it. But then two, yes, you do have to have, like Lee Daniels is trying to do, bring on the black writers, bring on the people who can tell our story the best because we live it and we experience it every day. But at the same time, when you get to a certain point, you got to have quality control and say, hey, this is what's going to go out. This is not what's going to go out. Because I think once we start to do that, then we will be able to control what our image is. We will be able to better control what people see and how people perceive us because we can only tell our story the best way we know how. It's like I talk to my students every day. You represent yourself. You are your best storyteller. You're your best marketing piece. You control what people see about you. You control what people say about you, but you've got to be the one to actually put it in perspective. So it's our responsibility at the end of the day to make sure that we take control of it and we also support things and people that are out there when they're doing good things, when they are in lead roles. And my last thing I'll say is, the other day, it's like, if you even look at the whole Marvel franchise and their movies, had a coworker, her son was at an event. He had a little red mask on, the white coworker, and a red character. I asked him who he was. He said, I'm the Falcon. Falcon is the only black character that's now going to be a part of the Avengers. In the comic books, he's been there forever. So he's the one that's being told on the cartoons for the kids and things like that to hear a little white kid say he wants to be a black superhero, struck a chord with me. We got to tell those stories more. We got to be able to highlight those characters and support those characters that are being told. Like, even as a fictional character, we got to support those things. And that's my last comment.
You have Claudia Jordan. You have First Lady Michelle Obama. You have Lee Daniels. And in all these instances, it surprises me how we have various degrees of opinions. We have various degrees of what we believe to be the truth. And even if you look at those three instances, there are various degrees of personality perspective. Why are we as a community so far, in my opinion, disconnected and can't get on one accord when it comes to anything dealing with our community? To me, each one of these are various topics that we really could have an entire show on, and we could have really did three separate podcasts on these topics. I wanted to have all of these on one show because I just find it so interesting how we, in my opinion, are so disconnected as a unit, as a group of people. Why is that?
It's history, in my opinion. It is.
I mean, am I making sense though? What I'm saying, or am I communicating to the listeners and to you all my thoughts?
You making a lot of sense. And it's just, I think it's just a glimpse into a group of people searching for answers and searching for identity. And I think that all just stems back to our history and our past and how, you know, in certain situations, how society has formed our way of thinking. And then you've got people that are breaking away from that way of thinking and coming up with new trains of thought. And so you're going to have different perspectives. But I don't think it's different than any other situation to where you have a collective of people coming together. Yeah, you're going to have different opinions when you're in the details. But, you know, I think in our conversation, when you just look at this three-party collective here, is that we all want the same thing. We all want our situation for our folks to be better. So really what it would be a matter of is us sitting down and working out a plan and coming up with a compromise that satisfies all of our, you know, our opinions and our perspectives, which is what you have to do. And I think what it has been missing is that people have just not been willing to sit down and collaborate. Everybody wants to shine. Because when you got these mass situations, it's going to take different perspectives and different ideas to really come up with something that can overcome those issues. But we've got to be willing to push pride aside. We got to push that hunger to try to be the man or be the woman and be the one that came up with the idea and just sit down and work at it as a team and be willing to hear each other out. And hopefully, you know, this medium, this format that we use, puts that on highlight and shows that it can be done. And so I just think that it's just a matter of us really getting more comfortable having these conversations and collaborating and sharing ideas. See, Cam.
Yeah, and actually with that, I think you make perfect sense. Like you said, it's so many different avenues. But what I look at it is what we always talk about is that we have to do what we got to strategize. That's something that we've been talking about here for the last 2 months, I think, the three of us, strategizing where we want to take this thing, where we want to go with it. Just like if you look at it from a military context, you're going to have different units with different specialties, different avenues, and everybody wants to win the war. That's the common goal, is to win the battle, be the victorious. But you have to learn and figure out a way, okay, how is it that this armored unit is going to work with the infantry? The air unit is going to work with the aquatic group or the naval group? You got to be able to put all those things together, and that's what happens in order to wage a victory, wage a war, or wage a military victory. So I think we have to sit down and do the same thing and figure out, okay, what are all of our specialties? What do we all see as different avenues and different tactics and way of approaching these problems, approaching these issues, and how do we use each one of those issues at the right time in the right way to be able to produce the results and the solutions that we need to do to move things forward? So I think You're on the right path, but it's about how do we harness all of that and bring it together.
Very, very well said. And actually, BG, when you were talking, you made sense from the perspective that each three of those individuals do want the betterment for our people. And I think that's the first step, is understanding that everyone in these situations want the best. And I think the analogy you used, C. Campbell, was accurate in that everyone has specialties, everyone has gifts. Learning how to maneuver as one is ultimately the end goal. And I think that the military analogy was great to summarize. So I kind of appreciate that, and I can it breaks it down for me to understand. Any other thoughts? Because that's really all I had. Any closing remarks?
That's all I got, man. That's all I got. Great talk. I've actually, you know, put something on my mind, something to think about. So anytime that happens, it's always a success.
Man, that's a great conversation as always with the boys out there. I think we all learn from each other every time we have these discussions. So I hope the people are able to take it and take something away and, you know, give us some thoughts, give us some feedback on, you know, where the thoughts are out there. But I think it was very positive. Great convo, fellas.
I think that, and I'll have a summary. I think that it's important for us to have these conversations. And I think at the position the three of us are currently in, BG, you mentioned this on a previous podcast. We're that in between. We're that bridge that's connecting the baby boomers from the millennials. And I think it's important that the Free Lunch Podcast listeners – really understand the time and the climate that we're currently in, specifically those that are in our age group and in our limit. This is our time. Now is our time to essentially define and establish the way of life for our people and for our culture. The very first podcast of 2015 was one about the power circle. And I continue to harp on that particular podcast because I feel like that podcast really defines the new strategy for how we should move forward. And that is essentially what we're trying to do with Free Lunch Podcast. Free Lunch Podcast, home of the New South Movement, was an idea that BG and I thought about, but we've always wanted to figure out how to not only empower ourselves, but we've also tried to figure out how to empower our inner circle. We spoke about Miss Jordan. We spoke about First Lady Michelle Obama. We spoke about Lee Daniels. Three individuals that ultimately want the best for the community, but in my opinion, are on three different wavelengths. What we're trying to do here is we're trying to empower not only ourselves, but we're trying to empower our friend and the group of people that we know. And essentially the point that I'm trying to make as I close and I summarize is that I would hope this podcast, number one, inspires you to mimic a game plan that we are borrowing from LeBron James and his group. And that's essentially empowering ourselves, but in the same time empowering our inner circle. So if you're asking for a solution and a strategy, that would be my first step in us achieving the ultimate goal. So that's all I have to say. Unless you guys have anything else you want to say, I'm gonna let you guys tell us how we can be reached. C-Cam, how can you be reached?
As always, people can reach me via Twitter, via Instagram, at C. Frank Campbell. I'm on both of those, so look me up there and whatnot. And always, you can reach me through, via the Free Lunch Podcast.
C-Cam, you the celebrity on the show. BG.
Yeah.
How can the people reach
us? They can reach us, freelunchpodcast.com for podcasts and blogs. Also, hit us up on Twitter, freelunchpodc, and on Instagram, freelunchpodcast. Tell a friend, New South Move.
You're not going to, you want to take a minute and pub Kids Ant?
Kids Ant, mixtape out now, datpiff.com. Search KIDZANT, Kids Ant. Hit me up, Return of the Salient. Welcome home.
Y'all better know.
And if you don't know, now you know. So before I take us out, I still want to encourage listeners, join in. I mean, you ask, we're trying to show by action. We had the Selma Project. We mentor. We're still going to have one of my mentees on the podcast. We do a lot of things. So join the movement. There are multiple ways to join and contribute. If you're an artist, if you're a musician, you want to team with us, reach out to us. Let us know. We'll figure out how to work with you. If you want to contribute financially to keep this thing moving and going, you can always donate to us. Just reach out to us either one of those ways that BG mentioned earlier. But to Black America, I want to say, we need some real good loving, because I'm troubled by the things that I see. We need some real good loving. Ain't nobody real around here loving on we. Free Lunch Podcast, home of the New South Florida.
Mama, I love you. Yeah, said hold it down. I sure will as I proceed to give you what you need. And for you hating bitches, raise up all these EQTs. Let me remind you, make it clear for the third time. We are not the same. I'm on my own cloud. Thinking you can get with this, use your other mind. Come celebrate a king, party with a second line. It ain't so trivial, a foreign like Bolivia. Rebus shots for hip-hop, can you feel it, bruh? Chant down Babylon, walking in the exodus. Executing vernacular to penetrate the pessimist. Ain't too many that can step, it's real, yeah. Giving people something they can feel. Penthouse when the ball drop. Came too far, now we won't stop.
See me never shine, put some light on their mind. Illuminate the dark, give them sight if they blind. See me shine for the ones that they said I'll never make it. Finally got my shot and I'm gonna take it.
See me shine, put some light on their mind. Illuminate the dark, give them sight if they blind. And see me shine for the ones that they said I'll never make it. Finally got my shot and I'm gonna take it.